Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games right here.
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Thanks to our mates at King G. Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Yes, hello. Welcome to day two of Magic Round from Pike's Pub. More detail on Pike's Pub when it opens. Every team on the same patch of grass across this weekend right here at Suncorp Stadium, and that's where we join you from. I can just look at that Tyre Power scoreboard before I introduce the team that awaits eagerly to chat with you for 3 hours. The scores so far, Manly 50, the Broncos 6, the Tigers 36, the Knights 18, referees 8, sin binnings. That's the big stat of the tournament so far. We're going to get into that story hugely. Graham Annesley will join us a little later on. James Tamo, who's involved yesterday with the Tigers, he'll also join us. Sterlo will be here at 2 o'clock. As I speak, I look across this panel and I just feel so relieved at the level of expertise that sits beside me. Ryan Girdler is here, MG Mark Guy, and of course Brent Reed. Gentlemen, how good is it to be in beautiful Brisbane? The conditions are wonderful out there, great temperature, the track looks beautiful, either we get great games or somebody's going to put 100 points. So I'm not sure which is going to happen, but it's, the vibe has been good.
The vibe has been fantastic. I've been up here since Wednesday doing some work with the rush hour, and then obviously last night's both games. But, yeah, the vibe, the weather, the people, the friendly atmosphere. I haven't been to a Magic Round before. And the thing I like about when you're walking the streets and going out for dinner and stuff is all the different jerseys you see. You don't just see the Broncos, you see Sharks and Warriors, and it's a fantastic event. I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, it's been good fun, Tone. I got here Thursday, so a day after MG, and we had some corporate functions to go on the Thursday.
But he'd already laid the groundwork for you.
Yeah, the foundation has been well and truly laid in the middle. And yeah, it's been really good bumping into a lot of people. A lot of people have marked this day down in their calendar to, you know, make a trip of it. And we haven't been able to do a lot of travel of late, so this is a really special weekend for a lot of people. And they're out in numbers, and that represented in the crowd figures last night. 41,000 people got here to see two games.
Yeah.
We'll speak about those games a little bit later. But there's lots of energy in the crowd, as you said. Stadium's in good nick, and we've got 2 days to go. How good?
The vibe's been great, Tone, but the games have been the anticlimax of it all. And I know we'll talk about it soon, but you know, the fallout from those two games and what happened last night, I think that's been, you know, it was going so well. You're right, the environment was great, the climate around here was great facilities, great crowd, but just the fallout from the footy has become a big issue.
We'll get to that detail. As I said, Graham Annesley will join us. And if you missed yesterday, it's all about the crackdown that has been laid. And when you and the coaches knew, Kevin Walter said he knew, it was quite explicit what was going to happen, and it certainly did. But the ramifications, well, it is echoing around the NRL world, and we'll get there next.
Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
We're coming to you live from Pike's Pub at Suncorp Stadium. Pike's Pub hasn't quite opened yet, so the atmosphere isn't pumping, but once those doors fly open and the punters get in here, it is going to be something to behold. As were the first two games of Magic Round yesterday evening. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the crackdown. The thing about this crackdown on what was going on the field and the fact that we were 8 sin binnings is that it was we knew it was going to happen. Kevin Walter said it was going to happen. Peter Volandis yesterday morning said, yes, it is going to happen. We're going to be very tough on it. We don't want our players suffering concussion. He said any foul play will be penalised heavily. We're going to get all that out of the game. We did that many years ago with punching by using the sin bin. You don't see punching anymore. You don't see spear tackles anymore. You don't see shoulder charges anymore. And we're just as determined to get rid of any knock around the head. Now, there was that, and there was also the repeated infringements. In the first game, 4 sin binnings were about repeated infringements at the ruck. Then it was the high head contact, which caused a lot of concern. And in the game when Broncos had 11 players to Manly's 13 and they racked up 50 points.
Yeah, I'm a naturally conservative guy, Tone. So, look, I mean, it's two games. And as you noted, the sin bins were different in the two games. They weren't for the same thing. So, look, I'm not going to come out and completely pan the NRL and Peter Volandis for what he's done yet, because I think we're two games in. Let's wait and see what happens tonight. There's three games tonight. And if the pattern follows the same theme it is now, then there'll be a concern. But I would have thought coaches would have watched that. Players would have watched last night, and they'd know you just cannot go anywhere near the head tonight. So hopefully they react to that. They keep the shots down. They don't give away six agains, and we won't see what happened last night because it did ruin the game. There's no doubt about that, particularly the second game. I mean Brisbane were never going to win that game, but it just ruined it as a contest.
133353, let us know what you thought of the rules interpretations and the games last night. MG, for you, we all know about we don't want the head to be contacted, yeah. Obviously, but was it the game that you loved being played out there on Suncorp Stadium?
No, it wasn't. I get it. I get it all. I get, you know, no shoulder charging anymore, no punches anymore. I get all that. And I love the rules that were brought in last year, six to go. Last night's two games seemed to go like 20 minutes longer than what we've been used to. When something happens overnight so dramatically, it kind of, and it's met with universal condemnation. I think we've got to listen. I think we've got to say, okay, why were people walking out of that second game at halftime, streaming out of the ground to go home? Because what they were witnessing, okay, they might have been Broncos fans watching a slaughtering, but I don't like the fact that we're blowing more penalties all of a sudden. The last two games, we blew double what we usually blow. And this is the fascination with rugby league is that we've got blokes who are 95 to 115 kilos running at other blokes the same size. We're going to have accidents. I just don't want us to be overreactive because what happened in the Roosters-Eels game last week. No one liked to see that, but they stuffed up. Someone stuffed up in that game last week, and I think we're all paying the price at Magic Round. Don't do it now. Ease us into it. Like, if I'm buying a ticket to come up here for Magic Round, I'm seeing this, I'm going, I want a refund. Yep. I want money back.
Tony, we sat in the crowd for that. We called the first game and then sat in the crowd for the second yep. game against the Broncos. And it really felt like people thought they'd bought a ticket to go and watch the Foo Fighters, and the organisers rolled out Salt and Pepper, and Salt and Pepper left, you know, push it off the set list. Everyone was, the energy just, yeah, left the whole stadium in the middle part of that first half.
Yep.
And then everyone just started taking the mickey out of the game. And for, you know, I've been involved in this game for a very long time. And I don't always get to watch it as a fan because yep. usually I'm working at the games that I go to. But to sit there was kind of a little bit embarrassing for the game, to be honest. And I know we all need to take a breath and they will get better and it'll improve. As MG said, the timing of it could have been better. The way it was, I think it seemed to most people like a pure reaction from last week. Some of the things that came out through the week about, you know, treating an accidental head high like a punch. Like, I've never seen anyone throw an accidental punch. I think when you build a game around, you know, making people fatigued and trying to, you know, get more ball in play, and then you make it even more difficult for the players and the people that need to toe the line because, you know, they're making decisions under fatigue. They're going to get it wrong every now and again, and we don't want people getting hits in the head.
Yep.
But it's a professional sport, and I don't know whether we're looking for participation numbers, whether we're worried about lawsuits down the track and litigation with players and concussion. I know we just want to get it out of the game as a whole, but I don't think you ever can. Yep. Unfortunately, there's just some sports that are collision sports that are always going to be played in the same way.
And what's the punishment? What's gone on in the judiciary?
The judiciary has now come out. Four Broncos players have been charged. Tyson Gamble, Tevita Pangai have both been fined. Jordan Ricci's got two charges. One's a fine, and the other one, the crusher tackle, is a 2 to 3 week suspension. So,
right.
Obviously, the match review committee's thought enough of those incidents to charge those guys. But what I find really interesting as well, Tone, is, you know, this exacerbates his view that it's policy on the run. Changes yep. getting made on the run. You've got the changes that were made about making the game faster. And then when you combine that with reducing teams to 11 men, the gulf's so wide now between the good and the bad teams. Once a bad team loses control of the game, they yep. can't wrestle it back. It's even worse when you only got 11 men on the field. You're no chance.
I spoke to Jared Maxwell before the game yesterday, and I said, surely if we're going to clamp down on this, and Jared Maxwell's now the boss of the referees, I said, surely if we're going to clamp down, you've got to consider a 5-minute sin bin. Because a 10-minute sin bin is at least one try. Yeah. At least one. And last night we saw three.
I think Peter Volandis, MG, has said this morning that he's open to the notion of a 5-minute sin bin, which I think is good.
What concerns me a little bit as well, boys, is the fact that we make these changes on the run, but there doesn't seem to be any checks and balances. You know, we don't always seem to be taking all the stakeholders into consideration. Every time there's a different story about, okay, the broadcasters want it and the fans want it, so we're going to do it. This time it's about, you know, the head high. People don't want to see people getting hit in the head, whether it's accidentally or intentionally. So where are the checks and balances in place to make these changes if we are going to make them on the run? It used to be a really slow process, and we all used to get a little bit annoyed by the fact that, oh, we're going to wait and have a look at it with the match committee at the end of the year, which had Lockie and Benny and I think Paul Green and all these guys on it, you know, guys that have been in the game for a long period of time on all different levels. Now it just seems we've got a couple of guys that may come up with a decision to make some pretty dramatic changes midweek, and by that weekend, all the teams are expected to toe the line.
Yeah. Just 133353, Ken has given us a call. G'day, Ken.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well. What are your thoughts on this?
I've been thinking for quite some time, like, seriously, if the NRL are going to get serious about head concussion and head knocks and these types of things, why don't they just bring it in that all players have to wear headgear as a mandatory part of the uniform?
The headgear, well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, does the brain still rattle around inside there? Yeah. I mean, we've seen in the NFL, though, still the concussions that are massive and they're wearing huge helmets there.
I don't think there's any data that's actually proven that makes too much of a difference.
It's a whiplash effect, isn't it? The headgear doesn't stop the whiplash effect. It stops the bloke getting a cut, but it doesn't stop his brain rattling around inside his skull.
What do you think we see, Reedy, then, this afternoon and this evening? Do we see what Peter Vlandis obviously wants? Is that the players then going, well, lesson learnt, and nobody gets near those heads? You know, obviously, accidental contact may happen. But do you think we see that? Do you think there'll be a reaction from teams?
I think there has to be, doesn't it? I mean, if you're a coach and you saw what happened last night and you can see that your players are potentially going to get sin-binned more readily, you've got to talk to your players about it. You've got to... I would have thought the players have got to notice that and react to it. I mean, you guys played the game. If you'd seen that last night, do you think you would have been... You'd have
taken
lower?
MG would have retired. He just would have walked out of the change room.
I would have said, there's my boots, and it's been fun knowing you.
Look, some of those situations, you need to put in perspective. The Tyson Gamble one, he's 3 metres out from his line. He's got a big body coming on him. Yep. He's a small half. And he's got to make a ball and all tackle to stop the guy from scoring a try. You've got to do whatever you need to do sometimes in those moments to execute the play needed for your team. It's really harsh.
Yeah. Tony has given us a call. G'day, Tony.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How you going?
Yeah, good. Thoughts?
That's good. Thoughts? I mean, obviously we have to focus on the penalties that were for the head high tackles on from Brisbane on Manly. But you have to also ask your question, were there any penalties given to Brisbane because Manly players hit Brisbane players high? They didn't, did they? Well, I'm asking you the question because I watched the game last night and I didn't see a head high penalty given to Brisbane because of a Manly player.
So you're saying it's a lack of discipline on the Brisbane player's side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You mean Manly players were so disciplined last night, it wasn't funny.
They also had 67% of the football. Yeah. So therefore, fatigue was an issue. So then timing there is so much easier to control.
Yeah, but that's the way they played. They played better, and that's why they had the possession. And there was many mistakes that Brisbane made, and that's why they gave possession back to Manly.
And that's an issue with the game now, where, you know, Brisbane aren't a good team, and Manly are a good team when Tommy plays. So when they get control of the game, the good teams just hold on to it and maintain it and become so lopsided at the moment.
But last night was such a contrast to what we've seen in the last 12 months. Even some of the penalties in both games. Once Luciano Lua got pulled up for being offside six tackles later. Like, well, do we really want to go back to something that's happened six tackles later in a game? Something else happened in the next game where they went back again.
Well, that was for high contact. Yeah, they went back for after five tackles. Yeah. After the set had been complete, they went.
Isn't that what the match review committee's for? To say, okay, that was a high tackle. Let's put him on report.
I think it's statement time, isn't it? They're making statement after statement.
And they've made a statement and they've used a megaphone instead of a microphone.
that's probably right. I mean, they've gone along the path of rugby in terms of contact with the head where the first position is it's a red card. Then they will work backwards to see if there's mitigating circumstances to get you off the charge.
How good rugby going these days?
Yeah, that's very true. All right, can't get to all of your calls. 133353 if you want to get to us at any stage this afternoon. Plenty ahead. As I said, Sterlo joins us at 2 o'clock. We're going to look at all the games that are ahead of us here today and tomorrow. We are in Pike's Pub at beautiful Suncorp Stadium for Magic Round on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M Saturday scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
Heading towards 3 o'clock kickoff, the Bulldogs taking on the Raiders. That'll be followed by the Sharks and the Rabbitohs, two teams that got beaten by 50 and 48 respectively last week. Get to have a crack at each other this evening before it's the Roosters and the Cowboys. Now, we're talking last night, obviously a lot of controversy surrounding the Sea Eagles 50-6 win over the Broncos. But take that aside, what happened there, given the fact that they were down to 11 at some stage, the Broncos shouldn't hide that Manly's performance was terrific and the Broncos was again fairly inadequate. Let's look at Manly first and the positive side of that. They're a team that since Tom Trbojevic has come back have been, not just him, he's been incredibly impressive, but he's lifted those around him. Dudley Cherry Evans was again terrific yesterday. They look like a side that will sit, you know, well in the top eight. MG?
Most definitely. And we saw last night the Knights without Kalen Ponga. Well, I think that even as I'm getting a bit of reverb here on the back of this, no, thank you. Manly are just a different team. They last night had Tapau run for 200 metres. They had Paseka run for 234 metres. Kepi scored his first try. Olakau's playing fantastic footy. Jake Trbojevic has lifted. Morgan Harper. He's playing good footy, and it's all because of one man. He has that. We're in magic round. He's got that magic sprinkly dust that he puts over his players before they run out, and says, "Yeah, you have some. You have some." And when you've got a player like him, when you turn up to a game, you just watch him, and he's putting you see him put his socks and his boots on. You go, "Wow, he's with us." And geez, it gives you some confidence. And they're playing like a really confident team, and they're a lock for the top eight. If he stays fit, Turbo, I know they are a lock for the eight.
We can see the impact he has at the moment when he ran out before the game started.
Yep.
And, you know, I think the lights were off in the stadium and Tommy sort of ran out. You could just make the silhouette of Tommy running out and the crowd just went off.
He is
he's
charismatic.
He's just a superstar.
Yeah, he's
right,
a superstar. Because the Newcastle and the Tigers players were just kind of making their way off from a game that hadn't reached great heights, it has to be, certainly from the Knights' point of view. And then he ran out and it was sensational. He's got it.
His work off the ball, when they do have the football and they're just sort of moving their way, working their way to certain parts of the field, is incredible. He stands right behind the dummy half and he just pushes people. Him and Cherry Evans just push people left and right. But what they also do, and this is when I think Manly are best, is when they play really flat and fast, because Cherry Evans really likes to run the football. Tom likes to run the football. Now, Croke is now developing into a pretty good dummy half on the back of the form that these guys and the opportunities that the forwards now are playing with a bit of confidence are giving him. And so he just takes opportunities and they react. So as soon as, like the good sides at the moment, whenever there's an opportunity, a quick play of the ball, any sort of momentum going through the middle, they pull the trigger. And with Tom on one side and Cherry Evans on the other side, and then Tom sweeping from that left over to that right when needed, and now young Schuster with that, you know, the ball-playing ability he has, they're a real threat. On top of that, they have genuine speed. They're like the Melbourne Storm now. Yep. When they get into the backfield, they convert because the speed of Saab and Tommy just comes from nowhere. And so as soon as they break you down defensively, they're going to score a try. So they're really dangerous.
And they did that without Kieran Foran last night.
Yes, sir. Broken hand.
Broken hand. So he's going to be out for a little while, Foz. And I guess it means Josh Schuster will probably... He's going so well on the edge. But he's just unbelievable, Tommy. And it tells you how good he's going. People are even daring to discuss him playing fullback in New South Wales. When Teddy's the captain, Teddy's been arguably the best player in the game for how long now? It won't happen because Teddy will be the captain of that team. He'll be the fullback. But the fact that people are even talking about it, daring to mention it.
So what does he do? What does Freddie do with Tommy? Does he put him on the wing with a license to roam around wherever he wants to go?
Or centre?
I think centre. He'll play him centre.
If Latrell comes back from his suspension or his injury, is he injured or suspended, Latrell?
He's suspended,
if he comes back that and has at least one game, he'll be the centre partner. Mm. But I think they'll both have a bit of a license to roam because they're both very attacking orientated players. And even Tommy's defence of late, since he's come back, Gerd's made a point of view before we come on air. He's even looking bigger, stronger.
Yeah.
You know, he's number one on the back of him. He looks all shrunk because his lats are so big now. So he must have been really getting into the weights when his hamstring was recuperating.
What was it doing?
Recouping. Yeah. You get your coupons, you get your coupons. There's my bad hamstring. I want to get recouped for that.
Actually, it's interesting what you say about playing him, giving him a roaming role. Would that be better play him on the wing if that was the case? Would give him, is he better placed to roam around when he's on the wing?
He just can't help himself. Yeah, he just finds a way. And because he's just a natural footballer, he doesn't find himself out of position defensively because he gets back to where he needs to be because he reads the game so well. So
he's 3 steps ahead.
He played in the centres a couple of games last year, didn't he? He finds a way into the contest. And especially, you know, centre can be one of those spots where you don't always get the ball coming your way. So if you've got, you know, really good attacking players in the centres and they're not getting the football, well, they need to have the nous to go and get it. And he's a guy that's just not going to stand there if he's not involved. So he'll find a way into the contest. Yeah. You've got to have them both in your side.
All I know, he's got to be in the 13. So
100%.
Scored a couple of tries, set one up for his brother as well. Jake's looking a bit better too. He started the season slowly, but he's starting to get into it with brother around him. Okay, what about on the other side, the Broncos? Everybody acknowledges that performance wasn't good enough. And certainly they came under the pump when they're down to 11 men and they were going to get points put on them by a Manly side who was in the mood. Kevin Walters didn't blame what went on there, though. He said it was, for him, they were soft and got softer, and that's a tough word to use about a footy team. That's what the coach is saying, not my words. They got softer as the game went on, and it was the worst performance since his time back there at the club.
Well, there's some contenders, because they've had some pretty poor performances, to be with due respect to Kevin. I mean, they got trounced by South, got trounced by the Storm, and got belted by Para.
Yeah.
So there's been some pretty shoddy performances during Kevy's time back there. They looked better in recent weeks, to be fair to him, but that was a step back last night. It was really, you know, it was an awful performance by them.
After a step forward last week, I thought, against the Cowboys as well. You know, I think, okay, last night we're commentating the game. We're looking forward to this. We think that, you know, the Broncos are going to turn up at least, but never in the game.
No.
And take the two sin binnings out, you know, and the sin binning dramas, and they were just never in the game. And that's a real concern. Has Kevy given them the right act too many times? You know, a coach is probably good for that two or three times a season. Every time we see the dressing room before they go out, the player looks like Kevy's just giving it to him with both barrels. I don't know. I'm not in the dressing room, but obviously they're not reacting to that.
They had a lot of good reasons to turn up last night and play well, didn't they? It was an away game for them, but they got to play at home in front of, you know, 41,000 people, maybe 30,000 Broncos fans. So they had it all there. They were They're coming off, as MG said, a couple of decent performances. They were unlucky last weekend, but they played with a lot more spirit. But, yeah, they just couldn't compete. They were just ill-disciplined. They've got certain guys there that as soon as the pressure's on, they worry about their own performance. They don't seem to have, for me, they just don't seem to have that team mentality. You know, and there's some guys there that have got a fair bit of experience now in some of those key positions that are good players every second or third week, but for some reason they just can't find a consistent sort of platform. Just to their best and their worst is just too far apart. You know, when you're in first grade, you know, you got to be a 7 every week, and then sometimes if you hit a 8 or a 9, it's great, but you can never go down to a 4 or a 5. The Broncos are just, you know, swinging on that pendulum all the time between that the 7 one week and the 4 or 5 the next week.
Yep.
And you just get exposed playing like that.
I guess with Adam Reynolds coming to the club, that was another bright spot for them during the week. May have given them the lift, but sadly, I don't know what it did to Anthony Milford. It's tough for him at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, really difficult, because it seems to be a different club link with Anthony Milford every week. We heard the Gold Coast, Cronulla, and it's becoming sort of increasingly obvious he's not going to be at Brisbane next year because, you know, I think Kevy's put the onus on him to prove that he warrants another contract. He hasn't shown it. I mean, he hasn't play consistently well at all this year, and you know he might be lucky to be in the team again next week, given the way he played.
Carmichael Hunt's around too, and he's available.
He's available next week. Carmichael, and Kevy got asked about him in the press conference last night. It would seem a guy like Carmichael would be great for them at the moment, given a bit of experience, a cool head on the field. But it's a difficult time for Anthony, because the other thing you've got to remember, I mean, he's on $1 million a year, and he knows he's about to cop a massive pay whack. He's going to have to cop 50% or more pay cut.
Yeah.
How long has it been on $1 million for?
3 years, I think.
You know what? He's put some aside.
You know what?
In one aspect, that's going to hurt him, but in another aspect, he might be looking forward to that.
And it could be a relief.
It might take the pressure off him.
Yeah.
Because he just played like a guy for the last 5 years with the weight of the world on his shoulders.
There might be some pressure on a man called Adam Reynolds. We'll get to him next on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to King G.
Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
And we're rocking footy from Pike's Pub right here at Suncorp Stadium. Thank you so much for being here. Lovely to see you. Doors haven't quite opened. But soon, this will be the heavingest pub in the Southern Hemisphere, I understand. Just better than that one in Morpeth we were at recently. All right, if Sea Eagles 50 over the Broncos 6, the Broncos are looking at that Taupo Power scoreboard. We'll be hoping that next season that all changed. Can it? Is the pressure being heaped on Adam Reynolds? Not only to find a fantastic place to live on the Gold Coast where he says he's going to retire, he's now made it official. He will be a Bronco, probably captain, as of next year. He did speak yesterday. Let's have a little listen to what he had to say.
I'd love to have stayed a one club man, but obviously things have popped up, and security for me was a big thing. And I said I was always going to be about security for my family. It's a big club. It's a one-team town. You know, it was a powerhouse back in the day, and I believe there's a lot of potential there to get back to where it needs to be. And it's a challenge. I love challenges. I'm a competitive person. I love winning. And look, I'll be doing everything possible to keep playing good, consistent football.
Adam Reynolds, there he is, setting his family up. You can't blame him for that.
No, I mean, obviously, South Sunday put 1 year on the table for Adam, and that was never going to work because he wanted more than that. There was obviously talk he wanted 4 years up here in Brisbane and four from Cronulla. Both those clubs stood their ground and said only 3 years, but I think he's a great signing for Brisbane, and he's just what they need. Perfect fit for them right now where they are, and perfect fit for Kevy Walters. And you know, obviously disappointing for the Sharks, but I mean, the Sharks copped a lot of flack this week about the way they handled negotiations. Now, Adam came out yesterday and deliberately defended that club, made a point of defending Cronulla and the way they handled those talks, said they were professional, they were diligent. But I think ultimately, I think he sees more potential in the Broncos, and I think he wanted to move up here, and it's a fresh challenge for him. So I think, you know, Cronulla will land on their feet somewhere else now.
Oh, I think it's one of the most profound signings the Broncos have made since, what, Israel Folau and Gordon Tallis and Glenn Lazarus?
Wally, the first.
I think Lazarus was the one that changed the whole dynamic of the club. Bought that winning culture from Canberra, and you know, obviously he was a fantastic player. But what he brings is a kicking game. You know, a kicking game in rugby league is so, so important. And the best two in the competition are probably Nathan Cleary and Adam Reynolds. What it allowed us to do as a forward, but having a guy who can kick a ball into the corners and repeatedly do it, it takes so much pressure off you when you're running the ball up, because all of a sudden you're making a kick that's attacking. So you've got them 20 metres out from their own line, and then you're trying to force a mistake off them. And then all of a sudden you get the ball back and you're 20 metres out attacking. That's what's happened to Penrith and Melbourne. They do it so well because, you know, Jerome Hughes' kicking game is starting to go next level as well. Adam Reynolds will bring that type of thing. I still think he needs a couple of mates to come with him. We hear a couple of names from South, like, you know, Sewer and Gagai, and if they can get one of them, well, things are starting to look rosy. But his kicking game, he's marshalling of the troops, the way he sets up play, he's not much of a runner of the football, but that's what you get with him. He kicks at 91%. He's a dead eye with field goals, and I think it's a real good shot in the arm for the Broncos that he's signed with them.
I guess that has any critics who have come in have said perhaps he's surrounded by creatives at South Sydney, the likes of Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell, obviously when he's playing, even Cam Murray, he runs off, and Damien Cook, not so much here, so there's a lot of different pressure on him there. And is it in terms of the length of the contract, how are those little hammies? do they tighten?
They're little.
They're tiny little things.
That's probably good for him.
Yeah, exactly. What do you reckon?
We also need to look at who's on the market and what Brisbane needed. And there was really, like, of all the people that came on the market this year, I think he was the most sought after, wasn't he, Reedy?
He probably was. I mean, the playmakers have been Mitch Moses, Jerome Hughes.
But Mitch never came onto the market because his option.
I mean, he was on the market for a little while, Mitch, but I think his price tag was a bit much for some clubs. Yeah. Jerome Hughes was obviously a bloke who was targeted by a couple of clubs. Cronulla had a go at Jerome Hughes. But Adam was certainly in that. He was on the podium. He was in the upper echelon.
So from a Broncos perspective, you know, they've just finally got their CEO. He's got his legs under the table, and Kevy's got someone to saddle up next to him, and they've been able to go out and get a good kill. And as MG said, he's going to need some help, because you put Adam Reynolds in that performance last night and he doesn't change a hell of a lot. But there's certain parts of that game, and even in last night's fixture, where they got to the last play and they didn't know what to do, and they threw the ball out over the line a couple of times, and there was a couple of poor kicks put in place. So he's going to change those little elements of their game, which are really important. But there's some elements of the Broncos' game that also needs assistance, and that is finding ways to break down defence, finding ways to break down defensive units, better attitude in defence, And so Adam's going to come up here and be able to tick a couple of boxes. And he's, I think you'll do a great job for him, and it's great for Kevin. I'm really happy. I hope Kevin gets all the support of, you know, the club and all the fans. But, yeah, he's... They've got a whole lot of work to do, the Broncos, before they're back in the top eight, top four.
They're not done, Tone. I mean, there's a few moving parts here. There's obviously the Matt Lodge situation. I would imagine Matt, my suspicion is Matt will be gone at some point in the next couple of weeks if he can find a club that will take him in Sydney. So that'll free up some cash for the Broncos. They signed Brenko Lee this week. You know, obviously he adds depth to their outside back. So they're still in the market for other players. They won't finish with Adam Reynolds.
South fans weren't at all happy that Adam Reynolds has gone. What about the club? What about the team beyond this year? Are they going to have a struggle in the number seven? Who's likely to be there? How does it look for that team? Wayne Bennett goes as well. Is it this year and then the window starts to shut on them premiership-wise?
I think so. I think they need a bridging halfback, someone to get them... Sean Johnson, someone else who's kind of, you know, a Gareth Widdop or a Matt Moyle, or someone just to fill that void while these young SG ball players come through and the young Jersey Flag players come through the system, because I don't think any of them are ready quite yet. There's no Sam Walkers there, or you know, there's someone who's going to need some assistance. And now that Reynolds is gone, I think they're going to have to look at the market and maybe get someone for a year, like an experienced halfback who's on the market. And I think someone like a Sean Johnson or a Milford or I don't know, but there's plenty of options out there.
They're going to have to also make a decision around what they do, because Latrell Mitchell, you can't, you know, he's going to play Origin, you would imagine, for the next however long if he's fit and available, and, you know, he's going to play maybe 20 games a year because he's that kind of athlete, he's a power athlete, so you're not going to get a full season out of him. So if every time that he misses a game, you're going to move Cody Wardle to fullback because you don't have now Corey Allen who's gone to another club and you've got Johnson on the wing, well then, yeah, you're going to need some experience in those halves. So MG's exactly right. You can't bring young guys through and expect them to do that job on a weekly basis at a certain level. So it's okay if Cody's going to fill in. He can play halfback. We've seen him manage games before, and he does a really good job of it, but he can't do that from fullback. So they've got some balls in the air that they need to catch.
I'm surprised, Gers, they don't use Alex Johnson at fullback. I don't know. Has he ever played there, Rudy?
No, sure. I'm with you.
I'm sure you can fabricate a winger a lot harder than you can weaken one position to strengthen another.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
With Benj, you know, Benj's done a great job on it, but he was always going to be a part-bit player this year where he was going to come in and do 10 or 15 minutes and every now and again play 80, but you can't rely on Benj at the age that he is to perform at a certain level every week for 20 rounds.
They got high hopes for a couple of young kids. They're Lachlan Ilias, who's, I think he plays, is SG Ball, what's under 20?
Flegg. 21.
Lachlan Ilias, who's a good young kid apparently, and Blake Taft, I think his name is, the other kid they've got high hopes for. So there's a couple of kids coming through the system. I don't think the window's closed. I mean, if you look at that side, you've still got Cody Walker, you've still got Latrell, you've still got Cam Murray, you've still got Campbell Graham. You know, you've still got... to be the totality, there's still a nucleus of a good side there. So, you know, if those kids come through, I think that window stays open for them. It just depends whether it's too soon next year for those young kids.
What sort of impact do you think Wayne leaving is going to have on some of those core senior guys?
Yeah, massive.
Well, I think it'll have a significant impact. But Jason Demetrio has been there for a while now. They know Jason. I mean, he's been the assistant coach. He came down with Wayne when Wayne came down. So he's a pretty respected guy around the game. And I don't know Jason that well, but what I do know of him, he has really good relationships with his players. I mean, he went up and visited Latrell last year in Latrell's farm at Taree. So I understand he's got a pretty good relationship with Latrell. So I think he's got good relationships with those senior players. He's been around them for a long time now, and I think it'll be a pretty smooth transition. It's just whether, you know, Wayne's a master at motivating players, but he's also a master at keeping players on side when things don't necessarily aren't going that well. And yeah, that's an art form, right?
Yeah. He's got the feeling this is their all the eggs in one basket season. Mm. You know, obviously Penrith and Melbourne are the teams to beat, but I think South, and having 50 put on them last week doesn't help, but if any team's going to buck that trend, it's them with all their players on board. They had four players out against Melbourne and significant players as well. I just think that if, you know, we're talking about other players joining Reynolds, if one of them is a Sua or a Gagai, then there's another player they're going to look for to bolster their ranks.
I think I've worked out why Adam Reynolds was talking up the Sharks at his media conference yesterday. They're playing each other this afternoon at 5:30. He just doesn't want to, you know, cop any flack at all from the Sharks.
It also opens the door a little bit next year for the South Sydney players to go, well, Wayne's gone. Mm. You know, and that can excuse performance to some degree. I mean, they're little things in the season, but all of a sudden, and they probably hear it in the media, they lose a couple of games early, everyone's going to go, oh, that's right, Wayne's gone.
And Adam's gone,
and then they can just fall into some bad habits. So that's something that, you know, Jason's going to need to keep a close eye on.
Segway Sam says, speaking of Adams, Adam O'Brien wasn't at all happy with his Knights players after their thrashing at the hands of the Tigers. We'll hear from him next on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to King G.
Triple M, Saturday Scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
Gerds is here, MG Reedy. My name is Tony Squire. Stella joins us at 2 o'clock. Graham Annesley is also going to join us. We've got a full dance card here at the beautiful Pikes' Pub. We're going to speak with James Tamo, of course, who was part of the Tigers' 36-18 win over the Knights, the first game of Magic Round 2021. Adam O'Brien, not at all happy with how his Knights went. Let's have a little listen to what he had to say.
You know, there's been 10 years of probably not having a whole lot of success, and there's three wooden spoons. So, you know, it's ingrained in us a little bit, and we've got to try and find a way to get a winning culture in there and do what those teams that have tasted success, they know what it takes, and they're that hungry to get it back and to taste it again, then they're willing to put themselves through anything. We've got to learn that. There'll be some changes in this club over the next few years. I'm not going to single blokes out, but it's clear if we can't get it, then I've got to find a way to get it through recruitment.
Knights coach Adam O'Brien sounding like he's just got off the torture rack. He obviously didn't enjoy what he saw, and he talked about the culture of the club, and he's talked about they'll have to do something, whether it's about recruitment, changing personnel. It sounds like a shake-up of some proportion is imminent.
Look, there's some extenuating circumstances at the moment. No Caelan Ponga, no Mitchell Pearce, yeah. But there's no doubt they've got a bit of a soft... You look at that forward pack, it should not have a soft underbelly.
No.
But
no.
It appears to the last couple of weeks. They just haven't stood up, and that's something he, obviously Adam's recognised that and wants to address it, and probably the only way he can do that, if they don't aim up the next couple of weeks, you start to plan changes moving forward.
Yeah, well, he took off Barnett and Clemmer, and I'm not sure whether it was Daniel, it probably was Daniel Saifidi after about 15-20 minutes last night, which the Tigers opening front row was Tarmow and he's and Twal played almost the first half, purely got dominated. And when you got the alpha male, which is Dave Clemmer, being ragdolled by a team who's struggling like the Tigers, you've got a concern. You've got a concern because he is the man who sets the bar for your forwards. Him and Saifidi in the opening couple of games this year, in particular the first one against the Dogs, they were super. Their team played accordingly. But now you look back on that, it was only against the Dogs. Look, there, Tyson Frizzell last night was very un-Tyson-like with that stoush with James Tarmow.
I'm interested to hear from James Tarmow about that when we talk to him, actually.
Well, I think what's happened, and I'm trying to read between the lines here, but I think what's happened is maybe O'Brien said to Tyson, your play the balls have got to be quicker. So he's kind of kicked out a couple of times, very uncharacteristically from him. One of them was on Tarmow, and that's when they kind of come to the Blues, and two guys who have never been that type of player.
No.
And the frustration you can see was kind of building up for Frizzell. And they haven't really had a 5-8 since Mitchell Pearce arrived there a few years back. They've had manufactured 5-8s, you know, and they've got Blake Green, who's at the end of his career now. They're banking a lot on him.
Yep.
They've got young Phoenix Crossland last night. They need someone to complement someone.
They bought young Jakey Clifford for next year.
He's a good boy.
Yeah.
He's a good boy.
You can see the frustration, though, Tony, in that press conference. It's a dangerous game when you start talking about the club's history and the three wooden spoons, and then he goes on to mention some of the success he's had at some other clubs and organisations, and it could be probably seen by the players as deflecting a little bit. I mean, they're there and they're now, and that's what needs to be addressed. And, they're in a massive hole at the moment. You know, even though they've got some key players out in the halves and at fullback, they've got a pack on there that should be able to go out there and get the job done and give at least a decent platform or a foundation for these guys, these young and inexperienced guys who are, you know, early on in their careers, an opportunity to play off the back of something. They just didn't do that. They got pulled apart. From the get-go.
You spoke about Dave Clemmer. I mean, Dave's only 27. He's really at the peak of his career.
Yeah,
he's no longer an automatic. He's not in the New South Wales side anymore. He used to be an automatic selection. He was an international. He's not the Australian side anymore. He's at an interesting point in his career, Dave Clemmer. Am I correct in saying
that? Yeah, he was the competition's firebrand. You know, he had that shaved head, and he's like a Mark O'Malley Mark II. He scared people. But these days, he hasn't scared people for not this year anyway. I don't know if it's something to do with the speed of the game and the new rules that are affecting him, like it's affecting other big players in the game, because he is a big man. He's about 120 kilos, 6 foot five, so he's like the Pashabuka when he's got to turn around. But he can still have a 15 or 20 minute stint where he terrorises people, but that seems to have vanished.
Yeah, you could see it, that people talk a lot about the ability to defend mistakes. Newcastle couldn't defend mistakes, and they had plenty of practice at it yesterday, and they got points put on them. So from the other point of view, the move, Adam Dewey's been playing great footy for the Tigers, and mainly, of course, like 5'8". He gets shifted to the centres, Moses Mbai comes in, and it seems to click.
Yeah. Well, the guy for me last night was Luke Brooks.
Yeah.
He's been under so much pressure this year, Luke Brooks, and he's got so much focus on him, and Madge defended him pretty heavily in the press conference afterwards, because I thought Luke Brooks was outstanding for them last night. Now, I don't know whether that's having Moses alongside him, who's, I guess, older and a calmer presence. But I thought it was great to see Luke Brooks running again.
Yeah.
I think we all talk about it every week. When we talk about Luke Brooks, we say, when he's at his best, he runs the football. Now, he ran a lot last night. I mean, I think he picked up a loose ball and ran away and backed up on an occasion. But when he runs in open space, you can see what makes him such a dangerous footballer.
Yeah, he needs some help, though. I mean, because usually he's got to manage the game as well, and then it takes away from, you know, when he just wants to run and play what he sees. So I think the form of Laurie's playing, you know, really helping the way that Luke Brooks plays at the moment. It gives him a little bit of confidence that, you know, he can give the ball to Dane, and Dane's going to make the right decision, which he did on numerous occasions last night. He's the kind of guy that knows when to, you know, give early ball, knows when to put a kick in, or he usually hits the right player out the back of shape more often than not. So I think that's taken a fair bit of pressure off Luke. And then Liddell coming back into the side last night as well. He's been out for a couple of weeks injured, and just the width that it allowed Luke to play at, and just the confidence as a group that they started with. That first try in the first couple of minutes out of their own end, you know, no Faluma just passing sort of off the ground almost, and then Mbai just, you know, heading across the field and then picking up Talau straight. That was all within their own 15-metre line. And then going on with the job and finishing that, they just started on the right foot and they continued on. They let a couple of soft tries in at the back end of the game when the game turned into a shambles because there was 15 people in the sin bin. But other than that, I think it was a great performance from the Tigers.
And well-deserved for Madge McGuire to have a little celebratory beer later in the night.
He earned it.
He did. He did earn it, along with the Manly boys. They're all earned it. This, of course, is the round to do it. A little bit of socialising as well will happen right here in Pikes' Pub. Plenty to come. Reedy's Mail is next. If that doesn't get punters through the door, nothing will. Maybe it'll be James Tama, who also will join us, Graham Annesley, on that crackdown as well. Stirlo at 2 o'clock. It is all happening on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to King G.
Triple M, Saturday Scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.